Hey guys, this episode is brought to you by Squarespace. Whether you need a landing page, beautiful gallery, professional blog, an online store, it's all included with your Squarespace website. So start your free trial today at squarespace.com and enter offer code CRACKED to get 10% off your first purchase. Hey guys, we need to tell you about the binge-worthy thriller from GE Podcast Theater and Panoply called Life After. It's the newest release from the team behind The Message, and it explores questions like, what happens to our digital lives when we're gone? Could our online personalities be brought back to life? It's got sort of a Black Mirror vibe to it, if you've seen that series. And you can start from episode one today and binge the rest. The story follows FBI employee Ross Barnes, who spends his days conversing online with his wife, Charlie, who died 8 months ago. And it talks about the technology behind this digital resurrection, and it's kind of realistic, or seems like something that could be in our future, and it ends up leading Ross, the main character, down a dangerous path that threatens his job, his life, and maybe even the world. So subscribe to Life After wherever you get your podcasts.
Our band could be your life. Real names be proved. Me and Mike Watt, we played for years. Punk rock changed our lives.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to another episode of the Cracked Podcast. My name is Jack O'Brien. I'm the editor-in-chief of Cracked, and this week we're listening to History Lesson Part 2 by Minutemen, who are a punk band from the 80s and don't really sound like a punk band from the 80s, in this song in particular. It's an appropriate song just on the surface, on the title of the thing, because this week's subject is the 80s, which is a decade I've been hearing people bring up a lot lately, that it feels like the 80s all over again right now. I think mostly in the context of our relationship to Russia, the fact that we're genuinely terrified of Russia again. And it feels like we might be heading for a future where we could go to war of some temperature with them, or that we might should. The night of the election, the celebration at Trump headquarters full of young white guys with red baseball caps on really looked like the pictures and documentaries you see of Reaganite stockbrokers and Alex P. Keaton types who, you know, worked on Wall Street during the day, changed out of their Brooks Brothers suits after work into their other Brooks Brothers suits to go out and drink martinis and do expensive drugs. For some reason, that's the image of the 80s that we get, even though it was a time of kind of exploding inequality and backsliding when it came to racism, and a time when the AIDS epidemic was being actively ignored. But for some reason, what we remember is just happy, corny, straight white people and sexual and racial minorities trying to fit in with them. Michael Jackson entered the decade as a handsome, successful black man and left having carved his nose and dyed his skin and changed his hair to make himself look like a scary white lady. And you can argue that he's just a weirdo, and he probably was. I think he lived maybe the strangest life in the history of human existence, but his weirdness was the product of the decade that he went crazy in. The human mind's capacity for cognitive dissonance is one of our more underrated abilities as a species, I think. I think I'm using that right. Cognitive dissonance, basically our ability to believe in whatever reality is most convenient for us, regardless of its relationship to the truth. I think the classic example is the fable of the fox and the grapes, where the fox sees grapes that it wants and can't think of how to reach them and convinces himself that those grapes probably tasted like shit. Basically, we create an internal reality that's convenient given our external circumstances. We're really good at that because as a species, we evolved to survive, procreate, and protect our young. We didn't evolve to seek the truth. And I think that capacity for cognitive dissonance is important to understanding America in the 80s. So this week, we're going to talk about what 80s pop culture that seemed fun and harmless at the time really represented. We're going to start out talking about Saved by the Bell, because we have the academic world's foremost expert on Saved by the Bell, April Richardson, with us this week. And we'll look at why that show might actually be about a character choosing to live in a false reality rather than accept the truth of his circumstances. We'll touch on why the Muppet Babies can be read as a critique of America's willful ignorance of reality, why our most misogynistic, homophobic musicians dressed up in makeup and mall girl hair. We're going to talk about Rocky IV, and speaking of which, I just noticed a headline on today's editorial doc. Trump offers Sylvester Stallone top post in National Endowment for the Arts. So that's happening. Anyways, let's get right into it. I'll be dropping back in here and there, and then at the end for some footnotes. Talk to you then.
Mr. Narrator, this is Bob Dylan to me. My story could be his songs. I'm his soldier child.
We are joined by April Richardson.
Hi.
Who is the host of, is the podcast still ongoing?
Or? It's technically not. I have one episode left, and it's the movie where Zach and Kelly get married in Vegas. And that's only been so long in the making because I'm trying to schedule. I'm going to have two guests for that. The two most popular guests. I won't say their names, but you can guess if you listen to the podcast. And it's just a matter of scheduling. So there's one left, but I already watched every episode. That's the thing, is I have people email and being like, please do more. And I'm like, it's a finite amount of shows, guys. Like, sorry.
Do them again.
Do a go bayside about Sister Sister.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's not even...
That would be
any other show. I'm sure somebody already did it.
There's no other show that you would be interested in, because it is like an amazing podcast.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Of course, I watched other shows growing up, but I don't have any other show memorized the way that I do Saved by the Bell. I feel like Saved by the Bell is like a part of my DNA. It was such a huge part of my life. No other show can claim that, really.
Oh, and we're joined by Daniel O'Brien.
Oh, yeah. I'm the other voice that you guys have been hearing.
This Big is, Dragon.
Yeah.
So, Saved by the Bell ran from 88 to 90...
Like 92 or 3, two. I think.
Yeah, it wasn't a long run.
Which, no, but it's doesn't it feel like just because it was in endless reruns on 19 channels that it ran for like 50 years?
Right, for me, it ran the entirety of my childhood, because I would wake up and watch two episodes at 7 a.m. and 7:30 every single day.
Yes.
And they just like start that loop over and over again. Yep. You finish the show, they graduate, and then you wake up and there's Miss Bliss. And just like this weird rhythm that you fall into
of
waking up with this show every day.
Yeah, and it was on when I got home from school.
Four times when I got home.
Was that just the only programming they had made for people that were like in their adolescent years? Because like people who are listening to this and who are younger might not realize that creating entertainment for like specific demographics was like a thing that people had to think of. And for a while, the only people who had thought of that was Saved by the Bell. And it was just this super, can you call it earnest? It's like campy, but unintentionally so almost.
Yeah, because even though it was for people our age of the time, it was still created by like 60 to 70 year old white guys.
Right.
And them trying to be like, I think this is what teenagers talk and act like.
Right.
So I think it was earnest in a way. Because I do think they were trying to say, you know, with like the very special episodes and stuff like that, they did try to frame it in a way like, I was a teenager and I tried to smoke weed with Giant Dakota. Like, how would I handle it? And I think it was earnest.
Now, do you have an easy time straight-facedly explaining what that show was to people? Because most of the people in my life have seen it as many times as we all seem to have.
Right.
And there are other people who are my age where I could like explain its cultural relevancy in a ironic sort of way, that we all like it. It's kind of campy and bad, but we all remember these, like, it's I'm So Excited, and we remember Johnny Dakota, we remember the drinking and driving episode, all these like very specific things. But if someone was like, I'm an alien, what is this show about? Which is like, it's like a high school show in California, and one of the kids is sort of magic.
Yeah.
And they fight, but it's not really clear.
One of the kids can bend the rules of time and space. Right. I don't know, because I think the irony for me only came in as an adult. When I was watching this in school, I truly thought it was good. Because when I was watching it, like, in middle school, I was like, this is what high school is going to be like. Mm-hmm. I'm like, this is a documentary. This is what high school will be like when I get there. So once I got to high school and obviously found out that was wrong, I'm like, oh, okay. Maybe a little bit of irony crept in, but I still genuinely loved it.
Yeah.
But it's only now with adult eyes. Like, if I tried to explain it to somebody, I would be like, oh, yeah, it was, like, super crazy bad and whatever. But if you'd asked me this at, like, 15, I would have been like, this is a very good show.
Oh, absolutely.
That is really genuinely entertaining. And the main thing that always intrigued me is because in my school, I don't know about you guys, but like cliques were very defined. Like right. Never in a million years would the coolest guy in my school hang out with the biggest nerd in my school. Right. Like that right. never would have happened.
No. And everything about that was like, oh, you know how in high school where sometimes you're on track and sometimes you're on wrestling and sometimes
yes!
you're in the play and sometimes you're in the band.
Yes. Like the times where like Slater's in a ballet, it's like he would get his ass kicked at my right. high school. Like, what are you talking about?
How does he have time to do ballet and wrestling?
Yes.
How can he be great at both? And also in the Snow White and the Seven Dorks.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. Learn all those raps.
I've always suspected that Mario Lopez wanted to dance really badly.
Oh, for
and
sure.
that was like, that was entirely manufactured
yes.
because he like knew he was good at
he
ballet.
Wanted to dance yeah. and wear a half shirt at
right.
some point.
Mario Lopez is a guy who now hosts entertainment, some shit, Entertainment
yeah.
Weekly or
yeah.
whatever. He's like an entertainment reporter who just like smiles and like completely blank behind the eyes.
Yeah.
And we've joked on the site that he's like Satan incarnate.
When I was on tour last year, my job last year was opening for Chris Hardwick. And there was one time we were flying, I forget where we were flying to, but we were already in our seats. I watched Mario Lopez walk on the plane and I'm texting because Hardwick's like a few rows ahead of me. And I'm like, dude, Slater's on the plane. And he's like, okay. And he sat down right next to Hardwick. And I was like, dude, is he sitting next to you? And I'm texting him. And then Chris texted, his phone rang and he answered it. Yo, surprising no one.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yo. You got Lopez.
Yeah, totally.
That's one of the things that I feel like the pilot needs to come on. Be like, oh, yeah, holy shit, is that Mario
yeah.
Lopez? nobody look.
Mario Lopez? Slater's on the plane right now. No one look.
Yeah, we were just talking today about taking the ethnicity out of things. I never thought about that. But yeah, he was Slater, which is not a
right.
Hispanic last name.
Yeah.
But,
right.
Yeah.
Which the both times they showed his parents, they were both Hispanic actors.
Right.
Like, oh, actually, hold on. They showed his dad because of the episode where Zach has to pose for... They never showed his mom. Remember, the only time they showed his mom, and I'm doing air quotes, is when he was trying to break up the date. Remember that he hires a lady to be like, I'm Slater's mom. It's my birthday. I was supposed to go to the movies with him tonight to break up his date. So you never see his actual mom.
Wow.
Sorry, I'm going deep canon.
Did
that
show do two separate hire someone to pretend to be a parent? Because Zach had the guy from the diner pretend to be
James
his dad.
The actor?
Yeah.
Yes.
Really?
They did that on so many occasions. There were a few occasions where the situation didn't even call for it. I remember one of them, it was like, yeah, I'm going to hire so-and-so to be so-and-so, where I was like, all the people that were going to be there I'd never met. Like, you don't have to hire anybody. You could have just got, like, a friend. Like, I don't know. Now I'm getting too into, like, you guys.
Deep cuts.
Yeah.
Deep cuts. I do feel like it was the peak lazy tropes in TV. So like the central clique being like one nerd, one
yes.
cool guy, one
yes.
one this, one that.
Yes.
They weren't the first to do it, but they were the laziest, like the
yeah.
most straight down the middle.
Right.
And then like every trope, I think I remember them having the I'm on a date and I have like a radio in my ear.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Yes.
Definitely they did that. They didn't invent it. They
right.
just like did it in the most straightforward, like,
but
okay,
they,
now we have to do this.
That's like espionage level. Imagine if you, when you were in school, a friend of yours was like, yo, put this radio the transmitter in your ear and I'd be like, are you a magician? How did you just make that? We're 15. There's an episode where they record the girls at a slumber party. And of course it's like Screech, who's
yeah.
like, I invented a thing to do
yeah.
this.
Right.
That was my favorite too, is the amount of time Screech did that. And they weren't like, you're an actual genius. Like, why
right.
aren't we? Yeah, totally.
Yeah, we glossed over the fact that Zach has a superpower, but we did an episode of After Hours. We posited that his superpower is actually the greatest superpower. It's better than all the Marvel characters.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I love your show. I did watch it last night. I especially loved the one about all the moms being dead in 80s sitcoms.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's another thing I didn't really think about when I was watching all of those, and how interesting that is. Because you guys were saying how it's like kind of helping a country that divorce rates are rising. So they're like normalizing it, you
right.
know, but how as a child of 80s divorce, everyone lives with their mom. Like 2% right. of people go live with their dad. So it's interesting that they made it so the moms were dead. When right. it shouldn't yeah. have been like, oh, your dad's going
to
bounce.
They're trying to be realistic. It would be moms. But I think, again, this is another symptom of this one room of 60 to 70-year-old white guys who wrote all of yes. television yeah, for yeah, a couple
yeah.
of decades.
Yes, of course. Yes, yes, yes. And you got to have that bumbling, dumb dad character. Like, it's always yeah. the dad's like, I don't know what to do. Fried bologna for dinner again, yeah. I guess. Like, right. it's always that dumb divorced dad.
Because there's nothing funny about a mom just having her shit together and right. just, like, right. really nailing
and
it.
And actually taking care of it and yeah. getting your braces when you need them and whatever. Right, right. Yeah. But Saved by the Bell is the next step of that in the way that it's... No one's in charge. The kids are smarter than all the adults. Right. There's never adults. It's like, wouldn't it be great if the world was run by kids and we didn't have to deal with these dumb adults?
And that's an interesting move because the show started with a very clear maternal figure in Miss Bliss. She was
yeah, totally.
The center of the show and like the moral center, just the heart of everything, and like clearly there to impart lessons on the kids. And then someone's like,
this is boring.
Yeah, what if like the principal was just a dummy and instead of Miss Bliss it was Mr. Tuttle and we made fun of his weight? Like that's right. going to be that should be the show now and no more parents or
Well, I've had people email and go, "Why don't you do the Miss Bliss ones?" And I'm like, "Cuz they're boring." They're boring. I mean, it's like a Disney thing where it's like the lessons are really hammered into your skull and it is like, "Oh, everybody gets along in the Well, I mean, I guess Saved by the Bell tried to do that, but it was obviously way more absurd. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I watched Miss Bliss, but yeah, I was like, this is like the Waltons or something. Right. I'm bored. Like, do some illegal shit, Zach. Like, whatever. Yeah.
Stop time and then, yeah. like, basically date rape someone, essentially, yeah. with right. your superpower. Mr. Belding is a comically stupid character. It's like if Daniel Stern's character from Home Alone, the
yeah,
bumbling
the
robber,
bandits.
Was the principal yeah. of your high school, is the Mr. Belding character, except he's, like, more emotionally needy, like he really wants to be friends with the kids.
Yes.
Actually, speaking of the Miss Bliss thing, we have a fan theory we wrote up on the site about if you listen to the lyrics to the Saved by the Bell song, it's all about waking up in the morning, you know?
Sure.
And so at the end of the song, it's going back to sleep at the end of the day. So the theory is that the Miss Bliss season is actual reality. And then everything after that is just Zach's dreams. Because in the song, you hear him talk about like how shitty his day is.
Yes.
Which is never reflected in
yes,
the show.
You're right.
The song that starts the show every time is like, he wakes up in the morning, has a shitty day at school, and then is like, but it's okay, because I'm going to be saved by the bell, go home. So he's saved
and
by the bell, go
my...
home, and then dream about
that...
like, having superpowers
Dude,
and shit like that.
I did that podcast for 3 years, and I don't think anybody said that. I think you're right.
Mm-hmm. All right, real quick, in case you didn't get the fan theory, I think it immediately made sense to April because she has such advanced understanding of the Saved by the Bell universe. To those of you lesser human beings, the idea is that the first season where Zach, Screech, and Jesse live in Indiana is reality. Zach is a substandard student. His teacher, Miss Bliss, is constantly outsmarting him and catching him doing stuff. That's the only glimpse of reality we ever get. Everything else in the show is the escapist fantasy of a disillusioned guy named Zach Morris. Now, the show does tell us once every episode what Zach's real life is actually like, and that's in the lyrics to the theme song, which tell the tale of a day in the life of a student who's kind of stumbling through an unpleasant world of consequences. He wakes up late and, quote, by the time I grab my books and give myself a look, I'm at the corner just in time to see the bus fly by. And then later, if the teacher pops a test, I know I'm in a mess and my dog ate all my homework last night. Riding low in my chair, she won't know that I'm there. Now, as a summary of the show, that theme song makes no sense. Zach has never had a bad day at Bayside in his life. He's never in a mess. Everything bounces off him. If he's unprepared for a test, he's not gonna ride low in his chair like some depressed teenager. He's gonna somehow get the teacher to turn the test into a bake-off and then win the bake-off by cheating, probably. So it only starts to make sense when you look
at the structure. The song begins with a bell taking the narrator out of his dream world when I wake up in the morning and the alarm gives out a warning. And then the middle of the song takes us through the narrator's miserably realistic life at school. But then at the end of the song, right before the show about Bayside starts, he gets saved by the school bell at the end of his school day, which frees him to go home to a world where, to quote the theme song, tomorrow it'll be all right, it's all right, because I'm saved by the bell. So the song ends with Zach being released from the harsh realities of life by escaping to the one place where everything is all right for him, basically a place that exists in the border between today and tomorrow, the nighttime when you sleep. So each Saved by the Bell episode begins with a theme song that tells us what is literally happening in the real world in the time between episodes. Zach is riding low in his chair, not liking how he looks in the mirror, generally eating shit like any other high school student. Then the song's chorus and the title of the show releases him to the fantasy world that both he and the show's audience like so much better than real school, the infinite dream world of Bayside High. All right. Back to our episode.
Hardwick said that he thinks that Screech is Zach's Tyler Durden, or vice versa.
I can see that.
And my friend Matt Kirshen, his theory was that the whole show is Mr. Belding's dream because he wants to be friends with the kids so badly. Sad. That, like, he was made fun of in school when he was a kid, so he was like, when I grow up, I'm going to be a cool principal who hangs out with the kids. There's been a few theories, but I think yours is the most accurate.
Because Zach doesn't have superpowers in the first season, right?
No, he doesn't. He's just a normal kid doing normal kid stuff.
He's like a C student.
Yeah.
And then the other thing. So in the first season, it takes place in Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
Second season is like a sort of shadow version of the school he went to in the first one. But it's in California.
Right. And he's like a cool California surfer
he's
guy.
Cool. He gets a 1600 on his SATs.
1502, excuse me.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. 1502, which isn't even possible. What?
That's school he moved with Screech and Lisa. Like,
right.
It's not just he moved to different schools. Like, we're going to take the characters that we like and port them over to this new thing.
Right.
Which happens in a dream when I come to work and I'm working with my mom and my first boss and a cousin. You know, it's like I just see them all as coworkers because I'm dreaming and I'm insane.
Yes, you're right. Because it's like, what are the chances in real life where you're like, oh man, I'm so bummed. Me and my family, we got to move. And then it's like your two best friends go, I'll get my parents to move us too. Like, okay.
Yeah, you're right. Indiana's kind of dead. Let's go to California.
Hey, Mom, my friend's
yeah, this
movie.
Place
can we
sucks
move with
anyways.
Him? Yeah, totally.
I moved 6 times. That never happened, unfortunately. So this episode's about the 80s.
It is?
Yeah, apparently.
I thought we
were
just
not.
Like cleverly stolen April's show.
No.
We're gonna have a Saved by
I'll
Bell
happily
podcast.
Do it again.
Well, I think Saved by the Bell is really a good representation of the 80s in that it's like deterministically cheerful. They're just like, everything is good. No bad things ever happen. It's got the racism's over thing where mm-hmm. Lisa is a black character who's like one of their best friends and she's extremely rich. What else?
I think Zach is like a Gordon Gekko. Like he just gets whatever he wants.
Yeah. Right.
With no consequences.
Greed is good.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, which Gordon Gekko was supposed to be a cautionary tale. And moviegoers of the 80s were like, that guy's my hero.
Yeah. The greed thing of, I'm just so fascinated. Also because I feel like we're about to live it again.
That's right.
Greed is my least favorite characteristic in any human being, I think. Mm-hmm. It really is. Other than like just willful ignorance. But like greed, because it's the sort of thing where it's like, how rich do you have to be? If somebody gave me $1 million, I'd be like, cool, I'm good for life. So the idea that somebody with $1 billion is like, I still need more money. It's like, what?
To the point that I'm going to get elected president so that I can steal more.
How are you not rich enough already?
That's kind of why I wanted to talk about the 80s is because I've heard that from a lot of people. Like, we're about to relive the 80s. And I think it's coming from a couple of things. It's the fact that now Russia is like our blatant enemy again. They're evil.
We have
clearly.
Actual Gordon Gekko as our president.
Yeah, right.
That was a big, very enthusiastic yes on Russia being our enemy.
Yeah. Well, we already talked about Rocky IV. Bring it, Ivan Drago. Yeah, it's like the Russian thing. Gordon Gekko, dude. being proud of being greedy is kind of like back in a way. Like, it's just the weirdest. Didn't we learn from, how do we not learn from this?
Right. Yeah.
I mean, we never, history only repeats itself, but I mean, it's just, we were all alive for the, this isn't like the 20s coming back where it's like, oh, a lot of us weren't alive, we don't remember. It's like, we were alive. Right. Why don't you remember how bad this was?
When did we all do an about face on our public opinion of rich businessmen?
Thank you.
That was a pretty...
Thank you.
Like, and like, no one was really harmed by that, because it's not like people are going out and beating up billionaires.
No.
For like, but even, all this anti-business propaganda.
But even in the 80s, they were punchline. Even things like Trading Places is like, when was like a bumbling white old businessman? They were like punchlines and stuff.
Right.
So now is it... Why is it everyone wants to be like the dumb, bumbling old businessman?
Right. Think back to... all movies and who the bad guys were when it's like a kid movie. It's always like, you'll all be in prison when I'm through with you. It's some guy who like wants to tear down the skate park to build a mall, and we don't like him. We made 900 movies about why we don't like
him. Thank you. But, and now it's like, that guy's president.
Yeah.
So Adam Brown used to write for Cracked, wrote a really great article about just, he said Reagan's the worst president ever. I haven't gone through all presidential records and can't say that you have, haven't you?
I would say that he probably ranks pretty high up there.
Yeah.
Though.
So like he had like hundreds of people investigated. He had like 38 people arrested or like indicted for breaking the law in his cabinet. I don't know. It's just like, we think that it can't happen again, but like the 80s followed a very woke period in the 60s and 70s. Like, you would never think that there would be this period of closing our eyes and like plugging our ears to the plight of the poor and disenfranchised, but like that's what happened in the 80s. And like, yeah, we still look back on 80s movies and we're like, yeah, we knew that businessmen were bad, but we like think of Reagan as a good president, and like he created a lot of the inequality. He like basically killed, what's it called?
Unions.
That's the one. Yeah, he killed unions, which like basically destroyed America's middle class. Like a lot of the problems that we now all acknowledge we have really started. And the thing he did with the AIDS crisis was just unfucking forgivable.
Right.
But we look back and like people are like, oh, we should put him on the 20 when he died, like, which is crazy.
Well, my mom worships Ronald Reagan.
Right.
Worships him, like thinks he's the greatest person who ever lived. But
this is going to be very unpopular, certainly.
The thing that I have a problem with, I haven't spoken to my parents since the election. My parents are super duper Republicans, which
is
fine.
Well, we have them on the phone right now.
Brett,
will you punch them in?
Which, again, that is fine, but it's gotten to the point where, like, we can't even talk about it, because even if I just sit down and calmly try to go, hey, can you just tell me why you voted for Trump? Like, they just start yelling, where I'm like, I'm not yelling, why are you yelling? So we've reached a stalemate. But the Reagan thing, and I even remember kind of as a kid, like, I remember my mom being like, he's tough, he sticks to his guns kind of thing. Yeah. And I'm like, why is that considered admirable? I would argue that learning things and changing your position based on knowledge that you gain is more admirable than just being like, I'm going to stick to this hard line. Fuck your unions.
Right.
Never change my mind about it. Like, why is that admirable? It was just kind of things like that where she couldn't give me like exact things. It would just be like, he sticks to his guns, he sticks to his principles. And I'm like, what if those principles aren't right? Maybe
you should
stick to them.
A lot of it is image stuff and impression stuff and the rose-tinted glasses that everyone gets with time.
Oh, totally.
Because,
and even
right
at the
now,
time, I think he was like symbolic.
Right. Right now, you're not thinking about how Reaganomics is still impacting us negatively today. And we're not thinking about the Iran-Contra affair because it's just not sexy. So if someone puts a gun to your head and makes you think about Ronald Reagan, there's cowboy hat. There's how famous he was about like making jokes, how he had some of the best quips, and how he was also one of the last, like, on a superficial level, cool Republicans. He's a famous conservative that people were like, yeah, he's not stodgy old white guy, even though he is a stodgy old white guy.
Well, because he was a
movie star appeal, and he had that, oh man, he got shot and then got up and started making jokes about it. What a like cool, tough guy. These are all image things. It's purely the stuff that is easy to report on and easy to remember and like easy to portray in pop culture. There aren't a lot of unflattering impressions of him on Saturday Night Live because he doesn't really lend himself to unflattering impressions. You know, he's not Jowly Nixon or dumb Bush. He's like kind of a charming
cool guy. He came across as like a chill dude. Like he's like behind the scenes not addressing AIDS in any way and secretly going, who cares about gay people dying? Yeah. I hate them. But in the public, looks like your grandpa. Like, oh, what a jolly... Yeah, he never came across as, like, a hateful dude.
And
yeah.
He might not have even been hateful. He might have just been... you were talking about, like, getting new information and changing your mind because of it. One of his main things was, if it can't be said in a single paragraph, then it shouldn't be said at all. So, like, this is another way similar to Trump. When Trump's like, I'm not going to do the intelligence briefings. Yeah. Just tell me if something changes. Clinton would get his briefings. He would, like, get these thousands and thousands of words downloaded to him, like, by somebody out loud while he was doing the New York Times crossword puzzle. And then, like, look up. People would be like, is he not listening? And then he'd look up and ask, like, an incisive question, like, right? And so, like, he's, like, this brilliant guy. And Reagan was just like, give it to me in a single paragraph or I don't want to fucking hear it at all.
Right.
So he might have just been not aware. Like, I think probably a lot of it was like people underneath him getting away with shit. And like his press secretary didn't want to bother him with the AIDS thing. So he just made fun of the journalist who asked about it for being gay. But the thing that people probably don't fully appreciate is how much of a cult of personality it was. Like,
yeah.
Alex P. Keaton is a character that put Michael J. Fox on the map. And he was like the spirit animal for like what was cool in the 80s. And he was a young Republican. I was talking to a guy earlier today who went to high school and college in the 80s. And he was like, we thought late 20s, early 30s yuppies were like the cool
thing.
He was like, yeah, no, like Kokomo sucked. The 80s sucked. But like, you know, there was
good
music.
We all wanted
music,
to be stockbrokers.
They wanted to be stockbrokers.
Yeah.
They wanted to be...
I mean, I'm putting the way that I learned about life on everyone else, and maybe they didn't do it this way, but what were their movies? This person who thought,
yeah,
like, these 20-something yuppies were the cool ones. Like, where did they get their pop culture from? Because mine, and this is pre-bubble, mine was pretty staunchly anti-yuppie. I mean, PCU isn't even a movie for my generation, but it was on and around me and present, and, like...
Wall Street?
I guess, right. is it just Wall Street?
Wall Street.
Or you're talking about guys who maybe watched the movies we watched and were just like, those bad guys are cool.
Rambo First Blood Part 2 is a movie in which Rambo goes back and wins the Vietnam War for America. Rocky IV was a big movie, and that was Stallone again going, so he had already won the Vietnam War. Now he goes and settles the Cold
and
War
kicks
by
ass.
Beating a Russian's ass and
who's
getting
like five
Russia
times the
to
size
root
of him.
For him. Yeah. Which, by the way, you're five times the size of Sylvester Stallone, and you're not tall. I actually pulled the top box office movies of the 80s, so let me call them out. But there's like a lot of sci-fi stuff, E.T., Star Wars 2 and 3, Empire Strikes Back and Jedi, Raiders, Ghostbusters, Beverly Hills Cop, Batman, Back to the Future. It's a lot of, I call it like national regression. It's a lot of like stuff that doesn't take place in the real world. Mm-hmm. There's this cognitive dissonance going on where like we don't want to think about our reality too hard. So we're going back to this version of childhood almost. Like our main characters are all children, or it's fantasy, or it's a black cop who is only friends with white people in Beverly Hills Cop. He all his best
friends. Big. Speaking of, I was obsessed with Big.
Big, yeah.
Where it's like, that's literally what we're talking about. Yeah, where it's like, can I just be a kid again?
Muppet Babies. That's a really good example because the Muppets were like aimed at like adults, kind of. And then he had this one dream sequence in, I think, Muppets Take Manhattan, where Miss Piggy imagines what it would have been like to grow up in an orphanage with Kermit. And Jim Henson was flooded with mail from people being like, make that a show. Make it a show. I want Muppet Babies.
Right,
and he
right.
was like, fine. And so like he made the show about young Muppets who like live in this imaginary world. And I think that's like a really good metaphor for like what a lot of the adult world was doing during the 80s.
My dumb brain stumbles trying to connect that to finding heroes in yuppies, though. Like Ghostbusters seems so clearly an outsider's movie to me, where the people who get shit are Dickless the Clown, Walter Peck, EPA guy, and
I mean that's
the only
true.
Thing I can
I
come
believe
up with,
that you're right. I'm just trying to map out the connection.
I think it's just like wrestling or something, where those guys were watching the bad guys going, I secretly think those guys are the cool guys and I want to be like them. Because you're right, there's no, I can't name a movie where it's like, aren't these businessmen awesome? Like,
right.
You know what I mean, check out how cool these stockbrokers are, everyone. While like, yeah, because I'm watching John Hughes going, the goths are cool, not these guys.
In fact, I almost never see movies where the football team jocks are the heroes and things. Like,
yes.
I feel like every movie from my childhood, not because I sought them out, was outsider's perspective. It was always
right.
E.T. That was always, like, weird kids.
This is going to sound, like, so dumb and pretentious, but it's, like, of course, because that's where art comes from, struggle.
Right.
Like, if you're on top of the mountain, you're not like, I got to draw about this.
Right.
Like, you're just like, whatever, I'm spending my money, who cares?
Yeah.
But
right.
if you're in the valley, then you're like, yeah, I got to make art about this. So that's another thing we're entering in now, too. I mean, not to be, the benefit of this is not, we're going to get cool art. That mm-hmm. comes way far down the list from fixing all the problems that this is going to create. But it's like, I don't doubt that within the next 4 years at least, we got to have another Clash, another
right.
Rage Against the Machine, another Public Enemy, like something like that's got to come from it.
Yeah, George W. Bush only became a great artist after he left the White House.
How weirdly guilty do you, when I was looking, I was like, these are kind of good, these paintings.
Yeah.
I'm not supposed to like this.
I'm obsessed with former President Bush and his paintings and how happy and how proud he is of them.
Yes.
And like, there's a quote from one of his teachers. It's the only quote from teacher in the article that I read. And the quote is, he has painted many dogs, which is very clear. The journalist is like, what can you give me a compliment?
The
sheer volume of dogs is of note.
Yes.
Is that,
that's
can I
the
go?
Nicest thing I guess. Yeah, totally.
Broken glass everywhere, people pissing on the stairs, you know they just don't care. I can't take the smell, can't take the noise, got no money to move out, I guess I got no choice. Rats in the front.
Hey guys, we're listening to The Message by Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five, which is a song about some of the stuff that we're talking about the 80s ignoring this week. And I want to make sure it's clear that I'm not saying music or movies about people who weren't rich and white or trying to be. It's not that those didn't exist. They existed. It just wasn't mainstream, or at least it wasn't as mainstream as like yacht rock and number one hits like Kokomo, the worst song in the history of humanity. I'm generally not crazy about 80s rap because the rapping can be kind of rough, just sounds too like nursery rhymey to me. But this song's beat is still one of the greatest beats I think ever produced. And the lyrical content is really strong. And I hope you enjoy it as you enjoy these words from our sponsor.
Don't push me, cause I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under.
This episode of the Cracked Podcast is brought to you guys by Squarespace. Whether you need a landing page, a beautiful gallery, professional blog, or an online store, it is all included with your Squarespace website. Guys, it's New Year's resolution time. Let's all be real with each other. Going to the gym sucks. So let's pick a easier goal for you, like, strengthening your online presence. It's 2017. If you're a freelancer looking for a job, you should probably have a website with your resume on it already. Or maybe your resolution this year is to quit your job, move to rural Washington, and sell artisanal peanut butters from your garage. With Squarespace's built-in commerce tools, you'll have everything you need to run your business. You can take and fulfill orders, print shipping labels, most importantly, get paid, live that peanut butter life making paper. And if you ever have a question or need help along the way, Squarespace has 24/7 online customer support staffed by real Squarespace experts. And if you buy Squarespace for the full year, it'll just kind of throw in a domain for free. So start your free trial today with no credit card required at squarespace.com and enter offer code CRACKED to get 10% off your first purchase. Again, that's squarespace.com and enter offer code CRACKED. Guys, if there's one thing I know, it's that we can be hard to shop for. We never know what we want when people ask us because we don't spend much time thinking about ourselves. We spend our time thinking about chopping wood and providing for the family, you know, real guy stuff. Finding the right gift for a guy can be impossible. I shop for a lot of guys, and I know this actually because I've been asked by every woman in the Cracked office what they should get for their significant other this year. And proving my point that guys are terrible at telling you what they want, I never have a single answer for them. But now I do, because Harry's has these awesome shaving kits. But not only is it functional, Harry's is actually like really stylish. Harry's actually makes a really cool shave set that looks stylish and hip, and it's just like a cool gift. They all come with a razor handle of your choice, shaving cream, replacement blades, and a travel cover. Their Winston set includes an engravable chrome handle if you want to add a personalized touch. So go to harrys.com right now and get a holiday shave set, and don't forget to enter code CRACKED at checkout for $5 off. That's harrys.com and enter code CRACK. My brother's doing fast on my mother's TV. Says she watches too much. It's just not healthy. All my children in the daytime, Dallas at night. Can't even see the game or the Sugar Ray fight. The bill collectors, they ring my phone and scare my wife when I'm not home. Got a bum education, double digit inflation. Can't take the train to the job. There's a strike at the station. For movies, I would say that Hollywood has never focused on conservatives, right?
Like, yeah, because it's like none of the makers are conservative.
Right.
What do you do? Make a movie starring James Woods, directed by whatever? It's like no one's going to see that boring ass movie. Right.
So my argument is like in the 60s and 70s, when they were in touch with the world around them, they made movies starring adults. Jaws was one of the top movies. Dr. Zhivago was one of the top movies. The Exorcist, The Sting, The Graduate was one of the top 10 movies of those two decades. And The Godfather. That rounds out the top 10. It's like movies starring adults about adult situations. Then you go to the 80s, everything's fantasy about kids, because I think they just like lost touch with what was actually happening in the world around them. Mm-hmm. And like, I hope that's not the direction we go, where it's just like...
just pure escapism.
Right, right. Pure escapism, rather than actually acknowledging like there's a whole bunch of people who are being fucked over by this administration.
Yeah. You know? I mean, I got some sour news for you. We've got like 11 superhero movies and Star Wars movies coming out in the next 5 minutes.
Right.
Moonlight's supposed to be good though, so.
Yeah, that's, I mean, like there has to be, I was thinking about this the other day though, because of how guilty I've been. I mean, I'm sure like you guys too, it's like since the election, just obsessively reading about everything and obsessively being like, I have to stay informed. I have to stay informed. I have to stay informed. And how that will drive you crazy. I'm going to be pretty useless in the revolution if I'm having panic attacks. Like there has to be, it's a weird thing to balance escapism and like activism, I guess, because you kind of have to. You will have a stress-induced heart attack if all you're doing 24 hours a day is like reading about this.
Yeah, I'm certainly catching myself doing it with other coworkers here, where we don't even need to fill in the names of articles that we've read or podcasts that we've listened to or new bits of information that we've got. It's just me and our my coworker Cody Johnson. Did you hear about the
exactly
CEO of I know
exactly
Jason Kander though, yeah, one day maybe, like just mumbling like on a boat that is sinking slowly, just mumbling into the ocean.
Right, so it's like in a way I'm not excusing it, but in a it is like a thing where you're like I can see why in the 80s they're like, you know, let's make Batman or whatever. Yeah, because it's either that or let's make a movie about how we're all doomed. And it's like way too real.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm sure there were movies that were about businessmen being evil in the world around us, like in the 80s in a very realistic setting that just got fucking ignored.
Yeah, I'm wondering, were there things like, say, The Big Short or whatever in the 80s?
I'm sure there were, and they just got ignored because it just doesn't seem like that's what people wanted to believe. Like, people wanted, Bruce Springsteen made a protest song, Born in the USA. People are like, fuck yeah, I was born in the USA.
And you're like, oh, have you listened to this? Right. Yeah, exactly.
All right, so a few words here about what I describe as our national regression during the 80s. When you think of 80s movies, or at least when I think of 80s movies, I picture movies about children where parents basically don't exist or aren't around. So like Fast Times at Ridgemont High, John Hughes movies, The Goonies, E.T., The Karate Kid. Now, you could argue that's because people's parents were getting divorced for the first time in the 80s. But the fact that there was a national need for Muppet babies, like we just discussed, makes me think it was something deeper than that. And I think Jim Henson knew it and knew it was weird, and that's why he had the only authority figure in the Muppet Babies universe be like a faceless pair of legs named Nanny. It's like a weird, modern, artish choice that seems meant to draw attention to itself. Yeah, otherwise, in the opening to the show, the kids imagine themselves going on adventures, and the adventures are from, like, Star Wars and Indiana Jones, which are, you know, escapist movies. I think Henson was commenting on that, that we were in the 80s escaping back into our childhoods, just as a nation. Anyways, with regards to the question that Dan was asking about why there weren't more yuppie movie heroes, Hollywood has liberal values now, and they had liberal values then, which is why our heroes tend to not be businessmen. But Hollywood's values are way left of the rest of the country, to the point that they had to accidentally make stuff that resonated with the people, like Wall Street and Gordon Gekko. And the movies that took place in the modern world in the 80s that resonated were Fatal Attraction and Top Gun or Cocktail or Risky Business. We mentioned John Hughes movies, and yes, the story is about the goth kids or unpopular kids do go down as classics, but the most successful movie at the time was Ferris Bueller's Day Off, about the most popular kid in the history of high school, I think. And as April mentioned, you don't get great art from the perspective of the popular kid, because the popular kids generally don't go on to make great art. But Ferris Bueller's Day Off was a nerd's idea of what it's like to be a popular kid. That's why that fan theory that Ferris is just being imagined by Cameron is so compelling. He's just imagining that the school would shut down if Ferris missed a day because he's staying home. Cameron's staying home sick and kind of having a fantasy of self-pity. But yeah, beyond those accidental movies about winners, the only other type of movie that was successful and set in the present tense were action movies starring Republican Arnold Schwarzenegger, or they were action movies starring the brilliant populist Sylvester Stallone, who, as Donald Trump apparently realizes, knows how to tap into the dreams of mainstream America. Otherwise, the only time that liberal Hollyweird made movies that resonated with the 80s, they weren't about adults, or they weren't about our universe, or the thing that was resonating was supposed to be the villain. All right, let's get back to the conversation and why I think all of this crazy shit was happening in our national unconscious. So this is my defense of the 80s, is that we needed to do that because we were going up against Russia, right? And we had kind of been like wavering a little bit in our national confidence in the 70s. And at a certain point, we realized we could just believe in capitalism and just fucking ignore all the bad things.
Right.
Because in Russia, if the government wants to say Russian economy good again, like we win and like the czar shits gold, they still have czars, right? They can. And like the newspaper is not going to say shit.
Yeah.
But like in America, you can't do that unless everybody's just like, yeah, let's all just agree to believe 100% in our president. We'll call him the Gipper and just ignore all bad things. And when you ignore all bad things, like a lot of bad shit goes on. But like the 80s was just this like head down. Okay, let's just focus on getting rich. It's almost like a self-perpetuating optimism machine where like, okay, we're going to be optimistic about the economy. The stock market goes up. All right, we can be optimistic about the economy. Stock market goes up. And, you know, eventually that crashed. Hey, speaking of things crashing, I highly recommend reading the story of the Challenger disaster, because it's sort of the perfect microcosm of what we're talking about, where the team that was preparing for the launch basically willed themselves into believing that things were going to be okay, even though it was like a 50-50 proposition and they kind of knew it. They knew the O-rings were kind of in really rough shape. It's a pretty great story, pretty great study in 1980s style cognitive dissonance, just keeping your head down and hoping for the best and assuming that won't end in disaster.
Like the people doing that though, it's like the stock market goes up, but most people don't see the benefit of that. That's what I always think is so funny in the way the aspirational I read this thing online that so perfectly described working class people seeing themselves. And this is so condescending. I consider myself one. My parents are not, like, my extended family are in the sheet metal workers union. Like, it sounds like I'm talking down, but it is a thing where
sheet metal workers. What now?
Union.
I've never heard of that.
Who? And he also voted for Trump. I'm like, you're in the union, but working class people seeing themselves as just not millionaires yet. And the 80s was like the peak of that, where it's like being rich is a birthright. You just aren't there yet. Where it's like some people just aren't going to be rich.
Right.
I'm one of those people. Right. I know I'm going to live in my one bedroom apartment forever. And I'm like fine with that. And so that's the thing, too, is like cheering things like the rise in the stock market and not thinking, but I'm not going to see a dime from this.
It's so weird how I'm realizing now that I was brainwashed by the stock market that even like I don't do anything with stocks now. But if you told me it was rising, I'd be like, oh, great news. Like, as a child at 15, the turn on the news is like, winners beat out the losers on the big board in the stock market today. And I'm like, ha-ha, another win for us winners.
Yes, all right, exactly. Off to school. And then thinking, oh, but wait, it's not like I'm going to see that in my bank account. Yeah, totally.
But I feel like the media, or at least a lot of pop culture, all agreed to focus on that, on the winners. On like, I can't think of much media from the 80s about poor black families. Like, there were poor black families in the 70s.
Totally. Sanford and Son and stuff.
The Jerk.
When did Steve Martin?
That was in the 70s, wasn't it? Late
70s. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was pure Carter era.
Yeah. Yeah.
Trading Places, he wins in the end, though. And they're evil white businessmen, but then he comes up.
Right.
And also in Trading Places, like, he's a criminal. It's not like he's gotten screwed. He's a criminal who like uses his criminal wiles to make it. You don't watch that and think, man, that poor guy like just needs a chance. It's like, haha, that guy's a criminal and they let him into this place.
Right.
So as much as you and I, Dan, have talked about Die Hard in our past, I just realized that was like a complete reaction to the 80s, because like it's a blue collar professional killing a bunch of people with like suave European accents
and like
who
suits.
Are white criminal crooks who are choosing to steal a lot of money. And then the only other really bad guy in it is fucking Ellis,
the cocaine guy,
the coke snorting businessman who's like trying to steal John McClane's wife. Yeah. And then John McClane's partners on the good side are another blue collar cop who like eats donuts and is just like, you know, street patrol, and a rap listening
driver.
Yeah. So Argyle. It's like, it's blue collar stepping into this like white collar world and just like fucking up all the white collar people.
By the way, just because you mentioned it, I've also been told by a friend recently that coke is coming back.
Oh, really?
That like, I've never
coke
done drugs,
left?
But
yeah,
like,
sorry, I was just,
no, but
surprised.
It's like a friend of mine the other day was like, I know a lot of people now that do coke, like openly people have always done coke since whenever, but they used to be like, I'm going to go to the bathroom. And now people are like, I'm just going to do it at the dinner table. Yeah. So I'm like, okay, so the 80s are fully back.
Right.
What is happening?
Yeah.
I know. Gross.
Could you pass the cocaine?
Oh, yeah. Would you like
some of this cocaine?
A bowl of cocaine?
So that connects to Saved by the Bell. I would say it does connect to Saved by the Bell in the sense that season one, they wanted to make it a realistic show about an actual middle school. And then they were like, no, what would that guy dream of happening?
Right,
and it's like this dream world where like everything goes well. And what Saved by the Bell did from season one to the rest of it is essentially what every Sylvester Stallone action franchise did from like the first two Rockies to, okay, now I fight Mr. T and win and defeat racism by joining with Apollo.
Right.
Now I win the Cold War. Or like Rambo 1 is supposed to be about survivor's guilt from Vietnam.
Working at this job has got me in this mindset, because we're looking back with the benefit of hindsight and saying, oh, the 80s movies were like this because it was a reaction to what was going on there.
Right.
And you can see the mistakes that would naturally fall out from that.
Right.
So I'm just trying to look at all movies and TV shows and music now and be like, what are we not seeing? What dumb thing are we doing right now?
Well, that's
that
what I was
will
thinking.
Become
when
so
I was
clear in the future.
It's impossible.
When I was watching y'all's videos, I was thinking that, because I was thinking, my genuine, as a kid, I just was like, Rocky Balboa is a fucking ass kicker and he rules, and like didn't think any deeper than that.
Right.
I'm just like, of course he beat that guy. Of course he's best friends with Apollo. Of course, like, whatever.
Right.
Like, he just kicks ass professionally.
Right.
and not going looking back and being like, oh, wait a minute, that's super racist, that's super jingoistic, mm-hmm, that's right. super whatever. Because as a kid, you're just like, yeah, punch that guy.
Yeah. What I consider a good movie is built on Rocky IV, because that was the first movie I saw in theaters. Like, mm-hmm. I remember I saw it.
I totally saw it too.
I was like five. We saw the preview for Poltergeist 2.
And I remember people like cheering.
Oh, yeah. It was fucking awesome.
Yeah.
So, like, I can't view that movie rationally at all.
Me neither. Yeah. Dude, I told you when I met Dolph Lundgren and I had to like stop myself from calling him Ivan Drago. And I was freaking out. I was like shaking.
You just know he would have been fine with it, though.
Yeah, I mean, he probably would have, right?
Yeah. He's
he's the coolest dude. He dated Grace Jones.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, he's like let me tell you why Dolph Lundgren's my dream man.
Yeah.
Giant muscle Hawkeye, also a genius, also dated Grace Jones, so he's like into weirdos.
You have like, such strange taste in men.
Well, he's like, you would look at him and think, oh, he's like a jock who would beat me up. But then he's like, no way, I want to date weird crazy art ladies. Hi, right. That's me. Yes.
Yeah, dating Grace Jones is like
the really coolest thing I've ever heard of. Yeah, they were the best couple ever.
Right.
I also, another thing about 80s, I miss that severe 80s lady, like the Grace Joneses, the Bridget Nielsens, the Annie Lennox, like that angular, severe shoulder pad 80s look for ladies. I personally want that to come back.
There's a lot of like gender stuff because it was severely homophobic decade, but a lot of gender mixing stuff, like rock stars who were like really homophobic in their lyrics would wear
dress like women.
Yes. And like lipstick.
Yes.
And talking about
that, like, was a thing is for me as a kid, because I was super in, still am into like the Smiths and the Cure and stuff like that. And I remember, and forgive me for saying this, but back in the day, it's like I got made fun of for that. Like people would call Morrissey a fag, and then I'd be like, but you're listening to like Twisted, like they look like women. Like, how are you not seeing the irony of calling me gay, but then you're like cranking up Guns N' Roses or whatever, who
right, this
are wearing
parade
lipstick
of long-haired hot boys in tight pants,
right?
Which I'm on board. I'm like, I'm fine. I'm on board with it. But I'm like, how do you not see what you're
Axl
doing?
Axl Rose was fucking hot.
I mean, he looked like a lady.
Welcome to the Jungle video. Yes. I was like, who's this very attractive woman?
Yes, exactly. But then he's like a crazy homophobe.
Right. Yeah. His lyrics are.
I was never into Guns N' Roses. I gotta tell you.
Not me neither.
Again, I was into like kind of goth stuff and then like Britpop or whatever. I mean, I heard them on the radio and I was like, yes, everyone, I get it. But I was not like super duper into them. And also he kind of like scared me, I think.
Yeah.
I think even as a young, I was like, he seems real angry.
Like unstable. Yeah.
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 But in
a
bad way.
I was obsessed with them because this irresistible exchange happened. I like really liked the Paradise City video. Mm-hmm. And my mom turned to my sister as I was watching it and like freaking out and like headbanging. And she was like, look what you've done to your brother.
Yes!
And I was like, fuck yeah!
That is straight out of the, like, we're not going to take it
right,
video.
Exactly.
Like, that exchange with your family.
I was like, well, this is clearly cool.
Yes! Yeah.
I'm really curious what the rebellious music is now, because my first entry of, like, acting out, the music that I kept from my parents was rap music. That was the kind of stuff. It was like, they can't know that I'm listening to this. They wouldn't understand it. But now, like, Hamilton has trained an entire generation of white theater kids to try their hands at rapping, and it's fucking terrible.
No,
so I don't know, like, what is the... How are we pissing off our parents today?
I feel the same way, because I went to see The Cure, of course, at the Hollywood Bowl, 3 nights in a row, no big deal. But I noticed there were a lot of... I mean, obviously, there were a lot of people my age and older, but there were a bunch of, like, 16-year-olds. And same thought, I'm like, if you're a goth teenager right now, who's, like, your Cure?
Yeah.
There's no, like, modern-day version of that. Like, you kind of only have... I mean, and rap is basically mainstream now, so that's not going to alarm any parents. But yeah, it's like, what's your version of that?
I don't know. Like, I don't know what music could scare me the way that I'm certain,
like,
Eminem would have scared my parents, or Marilyn Manson, whom I didn't listen to, but could recognize this will scare my parents.
I had NWA tapes I had to hide. I had to get like older friends to buy them for me.
Yeah.
And I used to put them in my Teddy Ruxpin. I used to make my Teddy Ruxpin say fuck the police.
That
is the best.
Really cool.
I mean, is there a more 80 sentence than
said?
No.
Yeah. I'm trying to think who it would be. Yeah, probably still like the stuff that has bad language in it, like the explicit stuff. And like 21 Savage is like pretty depraved and like nihilistic.
But I also feel like because of the internet, this is another thing about the 80s, when I was reading and watching all guys' stuff too, and thinking about being raised then, is like parents were pretty hands off.
Yeah.
Like, I remember, not that my parents let me literally do whatever I wanted, but they didn't really monitor what I watched, mm-hmm. what I listened to. And it was definitely a time where it was like, just be home by dark. Like, just go do whatever and be home by dark. That is different now, I think. And there was a huge divide between, like, parents and kids as far as, like, coolness is mm-hmm. kind of a flippant word, but kind of. Yeah. Whereas I think now with the internet, I would argue people's parents like know who Kanye West is. Like, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. When I was, my mom didn't even know any of the people I like. I had never heard of them. Right. Whereas now I think, I bet parents are more savvy. It's harder to shock somebody when they're like, oh yeah, I know who that is because of the internet.
Right. And certainly like parents are more active because there's internet and we know conclusively that there's pornography on the internet. So you're involved in what your kid is doing on the internet. When I was a child and there wasn't internet and I just walked into the woods, there's also porn in the woods, but like no one's checking up on us. No one is checking up on my brothers and me walking into a sewer that goes like under a highway. And we're just like,
as long as we're back
before it's dark. Right.
That was totally me too. I used to do a bit of my stand-up about the magical porn fair. Cause I'm like, every dude I know has a story about finding porn in the woods. Mm. Like, how is that a rite of passage for
it's
every guy?
It's a really strange thing that we thought, like my brothers and I were like, we are the only ones for whom this gift was bestowed.
Yes, of course, right?
And then
every
it's across the country. Like,
story.
No, yeah, woods, box of porn, sure.
Yes! Who is dropping these magical, who are these porn elves that are going in the woods dropping porn off for every little boy?
I had a friend who had really fucked up parents who were never home, so. And they like
everybody
had
did.
A porn stash.
Same, so me too. So I remember this girl in my neighborhood was like, hey, do you want to see? I was like 12. I was like 11 or 12. She's like, do you want to see something? I'm like, okay. And her mom had like a million Playgirls.
Oh, that's
she went in her mom's side of the bathroom and was like, check it out. And I totally remember this so vividly because she was like into it. She was like, yeah. And I remember being scared. I'm like, these are giant boners. Like, I'm like, dude, I'm like 11 like and child. I'm like scared. I was like, that's
what it looks like.
Yeah. And she was like, right. And I'm like, I don't want to touch that. That's scary.
I think porn when you're not ready for it is very scary.
And like scary.
Going into the, I'm not into the woods thinking I'm in pursuit of some porn.
Right.
I'm in the woods because I'm a child who likes to climb trees and like pretend I'm a vampire or whatever. Like I'm gonna go run in the woods and nope, all grown up now. Never mind.
Right. And you're like, here are some open pussies.
Just confronted.
Like, yeah. Totally.
Wait, you went sewer exploring?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Really? I used to do that too. We used to play this game called Ghosts in the Graveyard, which is basically hide and seek at night.
We played that.
Really?
Yeah.
Wait, where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Atlanta.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But yeah, I used to do that too. I mean, there were even times where if I told my mom I was doing that, she's like, okay, I can't believe how unmurdered and unkidnapped I remained. Because I really would just be like, later, mom and dad, see you in 12 hours. And they're like, okay.
Right.
Right. Because there was a forest near my home. Forest is generous. And we could just say to our parents, okay, I'm going to the woods now.
Yes, and they were like, cool.
And they're like, cool, all right. There was,
yes.
I'm going to go play in the woods.
Yeah. Yes.
Or I'm going to go ride bikes. And that
ride bikes that, was my number one activity.
All you had to say is, going to ride bikes. I was gone for 14 hours.
Yes. So just that like, was crazy. That's
he's
exactly
out riding
what
bikes.
I said,
yeah.
Yep. I'm just going to go ride bikes and I would ride like 5 miles away from my house.
My parents once like drove past me and I was like 6 miles away from the house and they were like, what the fuck are
you
doing?
You're like, I said I was riding bikes.
I was like, I just went on the highway. No big deal. Like,
same here.
Yeah.
I would go rollerblading every single night. And what I was doing was rollerblading to this girl's house that I had a crush on and I would just spend time with her. My parents didn't know that. That's like a good thing, like standing in a driveway and talking about whatever she was interested in. That's the tamest thing that I could have been doing. And they just never checked up on it. They didn't even, I was blading on home thinking, oh, I hope they don't ask me what I was doing because it's so embarrassing. I got a crush on this girl.
Right.
But they never asked. And it could have been drugs or drinking or just like, I don't know, skating into the sea or into the the same woods where, like, a murderer lived for a while? That's a true fact about the woods by my home?
But isn't that fascinating to think that a time that that was still more innocent, even though we had, like, zero supervision and we were just like, see you later, and went on our own for 12 hours, we really weren't doing anything. Whereas now, because of the internet, because of porn, like, kids are fucking at, like, nine. You know what I mean? And it's not, it's like, not to, I didn't mean to bring the room down, but I'm just saying it's a weird thing where it's like, I was talking to a friend of mine, because I'm at an age, too, now where a bunch of my friends have kids. And in this day and age,
they're all fucking.
And they're all fucking each other. But kids weirdly now don't care about getting their driver's licenses because kids all like Skype each or FaceTime each other. Like, they don't even need to leave their house to hang out with each other. Mm-hmm. So, like, they don't even care. Yeah,
that's
a friend of mine
strange.
Has like teenage kids, and I was like, oh, yeah, are they getting real psyched? Because I was counting down the seconds until I got my driver's license. And they were like, oh, yeah, they don't really care about that. Like, they don't want to go anywhere. Because they don't need to.
Everyone, I do.
They're a different species.
Wish I could quote an actual stat here, but I have read that kids are staying in so much more now. Very few kids are like going out and doing things, and they're just all connected on phones and internet. And part of it is the ease with which they can communicate with each other, and the other part of it is just the general fog of depression that younger people are feeling now. They just don't have, like, it doesn't seem safe outside. It doesn't seem good outside. It's just, we're going to just stay and
God, I mean, it's so much safer than it's ever been before now. Mm. And
I also hear myself evolving into a cartoon version of a dad where it's like, kids on their phones today, no one rides bikes.
Absolutely.
So this is the thing that I think parents now want to be cool. Like, whereas our parents did not give a fuck about us. They were just like, dude, your music sucks.
Yes.
Look what you did to your brother. This is shit.
Listen to the Beatles.
The Beatles was real music. Fuck you, kids.
I agree with you entirely. And now I think, parents are like trying to go to concerts with their kids.
They're like,
and shit.
What is this music you're listening to? Like, oh, Taylor Swift rocks. No, she doesn't.
Prefer uncool parents.
Right.
Yeah. Cool parents kind of creep me out.
Well, yeah, in the 80s, the ideal age was parent age. Mm-hmm. It was like, that's who you cared about, or like, that's where yacht rock came from. It was like music by and for like 30 something people, just like about how cool vacations were. It was like, let's go to Kokomo.
Well, cool. That's another thing about the 80s is that I'm 37 now, and when I look back at characters in the 80s that are 37, they might as well be 70. Like, they're so old looking, where I'm like, that's my age now, and I don't feel like I. So maybe I'm guilty. If I had a kid, I'd probably be trying to be that cool parent, which is gross to think about. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they're all wearing like pleated khakis and stuff in the 80s movies where they're 37 being like, I got my briefcase and I'm going to my office. And I'm like, what a dork. And now that's me. Like, that's my age now.
Yeah, you did walk in here in a full three-piece suit with a briefcase. So
I got stocks to check up on, you know?
Yeah, so not all bad. Mostly bad, though, the 80s. Big glasses, which I
had huge glasses.
I have a theory that the 80s, just as a decade, suffered from body dysmorphia. Like, because, like, the thing that happened,
everyone was wearing, like, David Byrne talking heads giant suits with, like, shoulder pads and accompanying giant glasses.
Yeah, and, like, apparently giant glasses make your nose look smaller.
Okay.
So, like, if you have a big nose,
is that what Elton John was doing?
Possibly.
Don't look at my nose, guys.
But, like, a lot of the stuff that Michael Jackson ended up doing to his face, like, when you look at, like, 80s fashions, they were covering up their skin with, like, tons and tons of makeup,
right?
And like trying to make their nose look small, and
and also, wasn't it just a product of excess? I mean, with greed comes just the attitude of everything bigger, everything more, everything bigger. So even when it comes to glasses frames, it's like bigger is better.
But like, even Roger Ebert had like giant like glasses.
Yeah, everyone did.
For people who weren't there, the 80s were like the city in the Hunger Games, kind of.
Capital?
Like, yeah, the capital. Yeah.
I mean, it kind of was.
Yeah, it was just like crazy makeup and like giant hair that was like birds got trapped in it.
Which but now it's funny because a lot of that aesthetic I'm kind of into, because I weirdly admire a lot of the women in the 80s, especially ones that like people like Susie Sue and Grace Jones. To me, it was a sort of thing of like daring men to find them attractive. I liked it in a way because they were wearing tons of makeup and stuff, but it absolutely was not traditionally attractive. And
that's
it was
true,
not
yeah.
for the male gaze. It was this very severe, like, I'm in charge. This is how I want to look. I dare you to think I'm hot because this is so far from like the status quo.
That's interesting.
So I was into that and found that really fascinating. I mean, I didn't, as a kid, I didn't start wearing makeup till I was like 30, but when I started, I was like, I kind of want to do that.
Yeah,
that's cool.
I want it to be less about like looking quote unquote pretty and more like how weird can I get with this?
Right.
So I like that part as far, I mean, of course, the opposite was going on where women were wearing tons of makeup to look like playmates or whatever, but the severe 80s lady, I was down with for sure.
Yeah.
Definitely. And because I'm like loud and tall and I was like, I identify with this way more than I do like Jessica Rabbit, whoever the fuck was the quote, the Christie Brinkley, like whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
No, those are your fashion options. It's Jessica Rabbit or Grace Jones.
It was really kind of that. It was like, you can be, you know, the hot lady or you can be the out of your mind lady. And I'm like, well, I guess I got to choose the latter. I mean, yeah.
Hey, Jack, the Jacker. We're circling this idea that everything that's happening now happened in the 80s. We're doing the 80s again. Is there anything I should be learning? Anything we can learn and we can
right,
do, or just ride it out and get a couple of Rocky movies out of this decade.
Yeah.
Look, if that happens, it ain't all bad, right, guys?
I do think the main difference heading into the 80s and heading into the Trump presidency is that there seems to be more of an appetite for political activism now among the young people. And like that needs to remain. A lot of the stuff we're saying was bad about the 80s was bad because people stopped paying attention almost on purpose to what was going on and just went with the cognitive dissonance of like, yeah, we'll just choose to believe everything is going well. So continue paying attention to not just people who things are going well for, but to the people who are getting fucked over, and continuing to do that. Like, yes, this has been great that we've had like some progress. That's how it's pronounced, right?
Progress.
Some progress over the past dozen years or so, but that can easily go away if we don't like continue to fight. And like, there will be a fight. Like in basketball, coaches always tell their team, like, you know, there's going to be a run, and like, you're going to have to fight back after they like come back from being down or go up by 10. Like, you have to be ready for that. And I think that like people who are worried about progress need to be willing to wait it out and like fight when things aren't going their way, which I don't know if you've been paying attention, but they're kind of not right now. And like, we can't let that discourage us. Like, we need to keep paying attention to the people who are getting fucked over.
Well, I think we also have the benefit of our generation having lived through it, like remembering like the 80s weren't that great for everybody,
right?
And having that knowledge to now, and now we're the adults, and now being like, yeah, I remember this kind of sucked, so let's not let it happen again, and being conscious of that.
Sounds like there's nothing we can do.
Yeah. And just remember, greed is lame. Like, remember,
greed fucking sucks.
Old white-haired business guys are the villains for a reason. They're
orange
lame.
Hair too. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having
me. That was fun.
Is there anything to plug?
Yeah, I'll be back home in Atlanta in February opening for Dana Gould.
He's
the best. I do a monthly show at the Improv with Karen Kilgariff. Everything's on aprilrichardson.com.
Oh, okay.
That's where I put all my dates. I'll be at Sketchfest in January. I'll be protesting the inauguration in D.C. in January and the Million Woman March.
You'll be in the company of a bunch of Cracked employees.
Okay, cool.
Not me, but other people.
Oh, cool, cool. You don't care about our country's future. Yeah. Okay.
It's just traveling, you know?
No, totally.
So inconvenient.
It is, because I was going to fly to D.C. and tickets are already like $1 million. So I'm going to fly home to Atlanta and then drive up. But then I'll be at Sketchfest in San Francisco. Yeah, it's all on my website.
And we say you'll be at the protest. You're doing stand-up there. You're not part of the movement.
Oh,
you're doing it.
No, I'm
set.
Doing like a set in front of the Washington Monument.
Yeah.
It's going to be great. Yeah.
Trump hired you out. Yeah. You're just
going to
be entertainment.
I mean,
at the
money is money. Greed, we got to get back into it. Yeah.
Right. Is there like a organized thing for people who want to go protest? Is there like a central...
The Women's March, I think, is womensmarch.com. It's the day after the inauguration. As far as the inauguration, I'm not entirely sure. I just know we're going to go up there on Thursday because I'm like, I want to protest it. But now after he did that weird thing where he filed permits where it's like, you can't be in front of like the Lincoln. He filed these weird permits to be like, there are certain areas you can't protest where it's like, what? That's where everyone has always protested every inauguration.
Right.
So I'm not entirely sure how that's going to shake out on the actual inauguration day. But I think for the Million Women's March, I think there's going to be so many people that it's going to be like, fuck your permits, dude.
Yeah.
I'm stomping on them permits. Like, whatever. Yeah.
All right, that was our conversation. This is How Soon Is Now by The Smiths, April's favorite band. Lead singer Morrissey is her little Gmail avatar. And you know how little those avatars are? I didn't actually zoom in on it, and I just assumed when we were emailing prior to this recording that April was just a lady who looked a lot like Morrissey. Anyways, again, How Soon Is Now seems like an appropriate title for today's episode about the 80s being repeated like a CD that is skipping, which is a reference that makes sense for only the oldest 40% of you. Just read a headline that said TV network studios shifting program strategies in the Trump age. colon, and then a quote, are we telling the right stories? So if you thought that the media and Hollywood's hatred of Trump would be like a firewall that prevented his influence from making its way to the movies and onto TVs, that's apparently not going to be the case. I don't know if when Reagan was first entering the White House, there was like despair and people on the left who couldn't believe that we had an actor who seemed like a real policy lightweight about to enter office. And if so, where that outrage went. But I would just say that that's, I guess, the one way that it would seem like we can differentiate ourselves. Outrage on behalf of whatever this administration's equivalent of the AIDS crisis and crack epidemic and exploding prison population will be. We can't let the irrational optimism of the Alpha Kappa MAGA frat party we saw on the night of the election drown out the genuine suffering that will go on among non-white and non-straight cisgender populations. Assuming he keeps his campaign promise to make things worse for those people in exchange for making rich people richer, we can't ignore it and let willful optimism drown it out again. Anyways, on to footnotes. We're going to link off to aprilrichardson.com. We'll also link off to the Go Bayside podcast. We'll link off to the article where we first came up with that fan theory. That was from an article that Logan Trent wrote 4 years ago and that Cody Johnson and I worked on with him. It's an article called Why Saved by the Bell is All a Dream. We'll link off to Adam Brown's article, 6 Ways You Didn't Realize Ronald Reagan Ruined the Country. And we'll link off to my article, 5 Baffling 80s Trends Explained by Rare Mental Disorders. And that's going to do it for this week's episode. Thanks to engineer Brett, who you can follow at Brett, R-A-D-E-R. You can follow me at Jack_O-B-R-I-E-N. And we'll be back next week with more podcasts. Talk to you then. We'll be right back.
This has been an Earwolf production, executive produced by Scott Aukerman, Adam Sachs, and Chris Bannon. For more information and content, visit earwolf.com.